Bye. I'm Marty Moscowen. Welcome to Radio Times. There are 51,000 people in prison in Pennsylvania, and 90% of them will be released after serving their time. A new report commissioned by the Pennsylvania Department of Corrections found that 67% of inmates released to halfway houses were rearrested or back behind bars within 3 years. By way of contrast, the results for inmates who were released straight from prison were 60%. These findings raise some serious questions about the recidivism rate in the Commonwealth and the failures of halfway houses to help inmates make a more successful transition back into society. The state pays $110 million a year on halfway houses. Corrections Secretary John Wetzel has called for reforms, and he joins us on Radio Times. And nice to have you back with us on Radio Times.
Always great to be here. Thank you.
So why did you want to study the halfway houses in Pennsylvania? Why did you call for this report?
Well, coming off the transition, we identified that the halfway house system in Pennsylvania, which we call community corrections, was not effective, anecdotally. 2009, there was a study done by Ed Latessa, basically said that 95% of the programs were increasing recidivism of offenders. And so we felt important, once we started structurally changing the entire Department of Corrections, that we established a baseline. And we did that by commissioning, through our own research department, and Brett Buckland, who's the primary author on that, took the lead on that, to establish a baseline by really broadly defining recidivism, and then looking specifically at the halfway house system to see if his report affirms the 2009 report. Sadly, it did.
Were you surprised? Were you shocked by these findings? Because I have to say that that's a really high recidivism rate.
Yeah. I mean, it's a shocking number.
Yes,
when you hear
is.
That two-thirds of everybody who leaves us generally either comes back or has a negative interaction with law enforcement, you know, that's not good. So from that standpoint, I'll tell you, the most shocking number is the first line in the study. And that line says one in every 200 Pennsylvanians are incarcerated in a state prison. Now, that is shocking.
Does one have to do with the other, do you think?
Yes. Yes, I think in some aspects, I think one of the things that research is very consistent on is that when we send lower-level offenders to a state prison system, they come out worse. So that's a piece of it. But listen, there's no silver bullets here. There's no one cure. One of the things I think is important for the listeners to understand is that we define recidivism in a manner that has never been defined before. So generally, if you compare us to other states, the recidivism is the reincarceration number that we use, which in our case is 43%.
Right.
Not bragging about that. It's better than 62%. But so if you compare us to everyone else, that's the number of comparison. And the national average would be about 50%, with the low end being about 30%. Either way, nothing to brag about. But that doesn't tell us the whole story. Reincarceration is as much a byproduct of the policy and return policies for parole violators and those kinds of things. We wanted to truly measure the good, the bad, and the ugly of our system. So we added rearrest and then added this overall recidivism number, which is the number you're referring to, that is a combination of both reincarcerate and rearrest, and that's our baseline. And that's where we start.
There are something like 38 private halfway houses in Pennsylvania, I think 14 state run. Were their results different whether it was privately operated versus state operated?
Not significantly. I mean, listen, the system has been a failure, period. And it's not we have bad vendors. It's not that we have terrible employees working in community corrections. When you have results like we have, it's not just one issue. And it really forces us to take a step back and first measure and establish a baseline, but then go out there. And we did unannounced tours of every halfway house in the state. And not just to surprise people, but to get a true picture of what's going on, but also to talk to the providers and find out how the department does business and what we do that interferes with what they want to do. So we think that, you know, the failure is a shared failure. So in some cases, we were sending people to the wrong halfway house. So if you're going back to the Philadelphia community and we put you in a halfway house in Erie, that's not community corrections.
Hmm.
That's a cheaper form of incarceration. And we got to be honest about that. But also, we were putting people, p- people need to go into a halfway house to get whatever needs addressed that we haven't completely addressed or that still remain when they're getting ready to get out. So if we have an offender with really no needs at the end and just needs a place to stay, halfway house is not appropriate use for that, because that's an intensive environment with close supervision. We know low-risk offenders don't do well in that. Conversely, if we have an offender who has a drug and alcohol issue or needs further job training or those kinds of things, and we put them in a halfway house that offers no services, then what are we doing?
When you say halfway house, I have an image of a house. If we're talking about these facilities, what exactly are we talking about? And I realize they probably range from county to county.
They range from block to block. So you see some in industrial areas that look like jails or prisons. You see some even with barbed wires around, which, you know, some would argue, and Nancy Wolf has commissioned a study that's going to be released, I believe, tomorrow on these halfway houses, which I think she defined as residential reentry centers, to just take a look and start the national conversation on this. But and that study really points out that you have from houses with 5, 10, 15, 20 people to these big industrial kind of facility. So it varies significantly.
I ran across a quote from you on some of these, I guess, surprise visits to these halfway houses. And the quote was, "We're not in the business of paying these facilities to allow people to watch TV all day." How much is that going on? The idea that they aren't getting the kind of rehabilitation that they need to make it in society.
Yeah, well, you know, we didn't set the bar high enough. So our expectation was that you house people, and that's not our expectation anymore. So some places, the good places, when you go in and you see a lot of people busy and doing constructive things, but there's other places you walk in and they're watching, you know, pick your favorite daytime trash. And that's not productive. And at $70 or $80 or $90 a day, it's not an appropriate expenditure, you know, for us to be spending. So we really needed to look at resetting the expectations and setting them high. And then, more importantly, tying an expectation that we expect you to reduce the recidivism based on the baseline. Right. So we're not comparing the recidivism of an offender coming out of a halfway house to a college graduate. We're comparing it to the history of recidivism rates at halfway houses, but we expect you to reduce that. And if you increase it, which is the case at most of our centers today, then we're going to take some steps to remediate it. If that doesn't work, then you're not going to do business with it.
Are you asking people then to rebid contracts with the state?
We rebid the whole system.
Okay.
And we're about ready to award the residential portion of that. But also, what we found in our halfway house system is that we've used halfway houses for everything. So, you know, I think there's a quote that says, you know, if the only tool you have is a hammer, everything's a nail. So if you just needed a place to lay your head, we put you in a halfway house at $70 a day. Well, if you do that math, that's two mortgages. That makes no sense. So we really are diversifying the community corrections continuum to do things like day reporting. So non-residential programming, outpatient drug and alcohol, outpatient cognitive behavioral therapy, housing. We have a lot in there that's really going to look at aiding individuals in finding appropriate housing in the community, those who are appropriate for that. So good systems differentiate, and they treat different people differently, and the community correction system needs to meet the specific needs of the specific offender. So we had to make the continuum deeper and wider, not just rely on halfway houses, but for those we put in halfway houses, we need intensive programming, and we need to measure and monitor that programming and measure outcomes.
What I found interesting, and again, this recidivism rate is shockingly high, but largely technical parole violations, property violations, drug violations. That's really what we're talking about. It seemed that violent violations were a small subset of this group.
Yep, that's accurate. You know, if you're the person who was the byproduct of that violence reoffending, it wouldn't seem like a small number.
Indeed.
But yeah, primarily, and as we know with our group, with the folks who come out of our facilities, drugs and alcohol are a key thing. And I think that one of the things that jumped out at me in that study is that 70 or 75% of the people who will recidivate within 17 months. So what that says to me from a policy standpoint is that we need to structure that first year to year and a half in a manner where folks can be successful. And it starts in the prison, making sure we're delivering programming so people can start getting well. And when I say getting well around people, people look at me like I'm crazy. But if you equate us to the medical field, it's not, you go to your doctor, you expect to get well. I think we need to raise the expectation for corrections. And that's really what the governor said from day one, is said, we want outcomes in our correction system. We want you, when, you know, all these people come to you, 90% get out. 20,000 a year come in, 90% of them are going to get back out. We need to make them at least not worse, if not better. And we need to have an impact on the bottom line. The bottom line's crime.
One of the findings was offenders returning to urban areas are more likely to be rearrested. However, those returning to rural areas are more likely to be reincarcerated. And Dauphin County, not Philadelphia, but Dauphin County, reports the highest overall recidivism rates.
Yeah, some
why,
of that
why
stuff,
is that?
Who knows? You know, some of that stuff we don't have answers for. Why? I mean, you can make some suppositions as far as why people who go back to urban areas are more likely to be rearrested, especially if you look around the state and see a lot of rural areas who lack even local municipal police and are relying on the state police. So your chance of having an interaction with a police officer is arguably larger in the urban area. So maybe that explains that. Maybe it doesn't. It's difficult to establish causal. But Dauphin County was somewhat shocking, although if you look at some of the problems they're having and they've had over the past couple years, it really isn't. I mean, listen, this is just one more measure of community safety. And in Harrisburg, where they're really struggling with crime, it doesn't surprise me. And I think it really points to the fact that when we do corrections poorly, we have a negative impact on the community. Mm-hmm. And conversely, we have an opportunity to improve the community through our correction system. And that's really what we're, as an administration, and again, the governor hammers this every time we talk. This is what our expectation is. Raise the bar, not just for Pennsylvania, for the field of corrections, but in particular in our system.
We're almost on a break here. And while this report is rather damning on the halfway house system in Pennsylvania, it does raise questions about the overall Department of Corrections and what's happening inside of prisons as well.
Yep, absolutely. And you know, it's not a fun thing to scrutinize your own system this hard, but it's honest. It's the only way to address it is to be brutally honest about your shortcomings, but also be brutally honest about your strengths, and then you use your strengths to overcome your shortcomings. And that's, we had to establish a baseline. We've made fundamental changes in the department. We continue to make fundamental changes as far as how we deliver programming. Our research says that our programming is good. We struggle in delivering it to the right people at the right time.
That's John Wetzel, our guest today on Radio Time, Secretary of the Department of Corrections for the state of Pennsylvania, talking about a new report raising a whole host of questions about halfway houses and recidivism. We're going to take a very short break, get back to our conversation, open up the lines at 1-888-477-9499. Stay with us. Call us. We'll be right back.
Is your child struggling in school? Supporting WHYY, Delaware Valley Friends, a Quaker College preparatory school in Paoli for students who learn differently. Delaware Valley Friends is committed to providing small classes, individual attention, state-of-the-art technology, and an accredited curriculum and faculty for grades 6 through 12. Open house on Wednesday, April 10th from 9 to 11 a.m. More information about Delaware Valley Friends at dvfs.org. Registration now open for summer reading and writing program.
This is Terry Gross. Join me Sunday afternoon, May 5th, at the McCarter Theater in Princeton for Off Air with Fresh Air. I'll talk about my adventures hosting Fresh Air, play clips of interviews in which things didn't exactly go as expected, and then you could give me a taste of my own medicine during the Q&A. There will be more to see than just me. We'll have animations by WHYY's digital artist-in-residence, Tony Off. For information, visit whyy.org/events.
Medford Lee's, a Quaker-related community for those age 55-plus and home of the Barton Arboretum, proudly supports WHYY. On April 13th at 11 a.m., it's their annual Arboretum Lecture featuring Jenny Rose Carey, director of the Landscape Arboretum at Temple University Ambler. Carey shares her passion for the historic gardens of Philadelphia during the 1920s and 30s and the women who developed them. Late lunch and Arboretum tours follow the lecture. Full details at medfordlees.org.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen talking about a new report that found that Pennsylvania's halfway houses are failing rather than helping inmates successfully re-enter society. Most of those inmates are rearrested and or returned to prison within 3 years. Our guest is the Pennsylvania Corrections Secretary, John Wetzel, talking about how to reform the system. And we're taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. It's clearly more less expensive to send someone to a halfway house. But if you're talking about really improving the programs there, whether it's drugs or alcohol, education, job training, housing, will that increase the cost of halfway houses, which is now about $110 million a year?
Yeah, I don't anticipate it increasing the overall cost. It perhaps will increase the per day cost, but the fact that we're using it for everybody, even people who don't need it. Right. So when we right size who's in those programs, I don't see us expanding how much we spend, but we spend our money better and smarter. And I think that's essential. One more point about, you know, we kind of got cut off of talking about within the department.
Yes.
And I think one of the key things that we have to keep in mind is that we have a duty to create an environment inside our facilities where people can be rehabilitated. And we are continuing to take steps and through training and really stressing to all our staff, from the officers to all the way up to the superintendents, that we have a role, and that role is to reduce crime. And so we're really working on internally, not just delivering programmings, but creating that environment.
Mm. And the environment says that, sort of like schools, that people who work there have high expectations, that they expect the people in the halfway house to do better and get out and be more successful.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You're talking about self-fulfilling prophecy.
Yes.
You know, really raising the bar and raising the level of expectation. We can do it contractually because we contract out so much of our halfway house system. But our 14 state-run centers are going to be held to the same standard.
Right.
So we expect that we're starting there, but we're also focusing on our facilities and focusing on how we assess individuals. Are we doing it the right way? Are we assigning the right programs? Do we have the right programs? And expect results out of them, too.
Do you have the right people with the right kinds of skills? I would imagine working in a halfway house and trying to help someone, in a sense, rehabilitate themselves requires very sophisticated psychological skills.
Yes. I mean, I'll tell you, the nice thing is that we have a deep bench. We have a deep bench within the department. The reentry is kind of the buzz phrase. You know, there's a lot of resources out there. There's a lot of skill sets out there. It's just kind of reorienting. Mm-hmm. You know, historically, we've done a lot of inspections on halfway houses, but we focus on making sure that they're clean. That's important. That they have good security. That's important. But we really haven't measured their outcomes. We really haven't expected them to impact the bottom line, which is, again, crime. Mm.
Do people in halfway houses in Pennsylvania, though, do they go outside these facilities and go to a job or job training, or does everything kind of happen within the facility itself?
No. Our expectation is that in most cases, except for the caveat is we have parole violation centers, and parole violation centers are for a technical parole violator, instead of coming back to us, Senate Bill 100, which is now called Act 122, said that they'll go to a parole violation center in a halfway house. In that case, they do get everything in there. But in every other case, we expect the halfway house system to increase people's skills, but also plug them into services so they're successful when they get out. Right. So focusing on getting them appropriate housing, getting them sustainable employment, and those kinds of things are absolutely an expectation. And if you think about it, if someone spent 15, 20 years locked up, for them to progressively get more and more liberty, supported by case management, debriefing, and all those things, right, that's a recipe where someone can be successful, and we can get them through that 17 months.
And not to undermine that at all. And that sounds excellent on paper, but creating a system and delivering those kinds of skills and care and service is complicated, and especially we're talking about a complicated, large correction system.
Yep, yep. And we're also talking about human beings who and now I'm referring to the individuals in the halfway house system who've, you know, shown that they're not folks who generally buy into following rules and regulations. It's certainly a challenging environment. Right. But I don't care how challenging the environment is, we can do better than two-thirds of the people failing. I mean, there's no excuse for that whatsoever. Not only did we restructure the system, but we based all the policy options moving forward on research. And there's a huge body of research. Again, if you want to refer to the medical field, look at the life expectancy over the last 20 years. It's gotten longer because the medical field looks at research, but then the magic part about this is they change practices when the research indicates. Historically, we've not done that in corrections. That's what we're doing. We have a body of research. We're now changing our practices to be consistent with the research. If it works for the medical field, there's no reason it shouldn't work for us.
And I do want to get to our callers. What then is your goal? I mean, you want to reduce the rate of recidivism. Is there a number you're looking for?
No.
No. No. I mean, if it's 66% as opposed to 67%, is that success?
I mean, that's progress. I'm not sure I'll be turning cartwheels like that's possible. But no, I think I'm not a person who believes that you are successful by focusing on the goal. You're successful by focusing specifically on the ways to reach that goal and making sure you're doing that in the proper way with fidelity. So we'll focus on that, and we expect good outcomes.
Mm-hmm. I mean, you have put some pressure on, especially these, I guess, private contractors that they have to deliver. Did you give them a goal, though?
No. Well, in the contract, it says it's tied to payment. So if you actually reduce, you get a 1% bump at the end of the year. If you keep it within a baseline, it's a 0.5%. If you drop below the baseline, then you're in trouble.
Then you're in trouble. Meaning you could lose your contract.
Not initially. I mean, obviously we have steps before. It's not like you have one bad marking period and they fail you out of school. Trust me, I know these things.
Been there, done that, right?
Yes, I did. But if you continually are having bad results, then you're not going to be doing business with the department. Or if you're one of our facilities, you're not going to be doing business.
And that's John Wetzel. He's the Corrections Secretary for the state of Pennsylvania, talking about a new report that found that Pennsylvania's halfway houses largely are failing. And we're talking about how to reduce the rate of recidivism in the state of Pennsylvania. And we're taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. We'd like to know what you think. Let's see what Susan thinks, calling us from South Philadelphia. Hi, Sue. Go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hi, how are you?
Good, how are you?
Good, good. I was wondering if you could talk a little bit about how you've been addressing mental health issues with people who are incarcerated and how that may change in the future.
And focusing specifically on mental health issues, Sue?
Yes, I've heard him talk about how drug and alcohol issues can impact reincarceration and things like that, but I haven't heard him mention mental health concerns and how they're addressing those types of issues.
Thanks for the call.
Yeah, that's a great question. And it's a great question because 21% of our population meet that definition.
Meaning they have some form of
mental health. They're on our mental health roster. Okay. Yeah, so it's a huge challenge for us. We are in the midst of restructuring our entire mental health delivery system within the department. From how we identify folks at the door, we've really taken an approach where we've really kind of defined our mental health roster, probably put more weight on behaviorally defining it. So we're really looking at how we define who's mentally ill up front, making sure we have enough checks and balances in place so we're not missing anybody up front, and then putting those folks on a different track throughout our system to include reentry. Because at reentry, rural areas in particular, you have someone who's seriously mentally ill and needs medication. In rural areas, it's often 3, 4, 5, 6 months until you can get an appointment with a psychiatrist. And when we let somebody out and we give them 30 days worth of medication or 60 days worth of medication, and it takes them 4 months to get to a doctor, that's an issue. So we, along with our partners at the Board of Probation and Parole, we actually, for folks who are seriously mentally ill, we do a conference call with the local case management and try to do a better job with that pass off. But that's another group, when I talked earlier about treating different people differently, that's a group in particular that really you have to wrap intensive services around them, especially in that transition. They're also a group that's more likely to max out or serve all their time and not have supervision. And people sometimes look at supervision as a policing, but supervision done right is a support for individuals, especially individuals with mental illness. So that's another challenge with our system, that we really need to make sure we're getting them out, wrapping the supports around them so they can be successful.
And when you say mental illness, what does that include?
That includes generally, the seriously mentally ill would include like schizophrenia, bipolar disorder, major depression, kind of that Axis 1. And then it also includes some Axis 2, depending on behavioral. So obviously we have a lot of personality disorders, but in some cases, you know, people with personality disorders are pretty successful in this world. In other cases, and you can fill in the blank
yes,
on that.
Yes, I just did. Yes.
But in other cases, that results in, you know, self-harming behavior and those kinds of things. So in that aspect, you have a diagnosis, and then you also have behavioral, and those two interact. So Axis 1 and then some Axis 2 based on behavior.
Let me get back to our callers at 1-888-477-9499. We're talking about how to improve and reform Pennsylvania's halfway house system. And again, our guest is Pennsylvania Corrections Secretary John Wetzel. Let's see what Mark from Springhouse has to say. And Mark, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Yes, good morning.
Good morning.
You know, when you say there's a 47% or 66% recidivism rate, you know, I can't help but believe that you're not capturing, you know, that there are people who are getting out of jail who are not getting caught, who are committing crimes. And it seems that, you know, rehabilitation is a failure. So to me, although it's an unpleasant reality, the answer is not to try to work to empty the prisons like we've been, which seems to have been the thrust, but the fact is these people need to be in jail. They need to be in jail for longer periods of time. They need to have harder restrictions with respect to eligibility for parole, and they have to be kept off the streets. I mean, you know, a couple of years ago, there was a headline in the New York Times that says, in spite of the fact that crime is going down, there are more people in prisons than ever. It didn't occur to them that maybe crime went down because the criminals are in prison.
Well, that's interesting, Mark. Thanks for the call to Radio Times. What do you think, John Wetzel?
Yeah, if we look at our neighbors in New York, you see crime down and incarceration down. So I would disagree that you don't have the ability to impact the crime rate. And I'd also say that approach, we've done that, been there, done that. That's why one in every 200 Pennsylvanians are incarcerated. That's why we spend $2 billion when we don't want to spend that much money on corrections. And the more that we keep throwing into corrections, and if it increased public safety, I'd be all for it. Mm. But in some cases, if you're sending low-level offenders to a state prison, and you think the answer is sending low-level offenders to a state prison longer, you're throwing good money after bad.
When we talk about the 1 in 200 Pennsylvania residents in prison, is it largely for violent crimes? Is it largely for drug-related crimes, property crimes? What are we talking about?
Everything. We're talking about everything. And I can't recall the specific percentages of violent versus nonviolent in our population makeup right now. But we're talking all crimes. And generally at the state level, it's not, you know, by the time you've earned your way to the state level, you've been arrested 7 or 8 times. Mm. So it's generally not, we're not talking about people who are jaywalking. We're talking about people who've committed either serious crimes or more specifically drug crimes. And really that's, I think, the group that we really need to look at, and just throwing a drug addict in a prison and not doing anything to get them sober, gives you an older drug addict when they get out, and maybe an older and angrier drug addict who now went to graduate school for criminals.
That's how you see it?
That's how I see it, unless we're doing it right.
Mark, thanks for the call. Let's see what George from Delaware County has to say. George, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Yes, good morning.
Good morning.
It's ironic. I was at a meeting in Reading this morning that was talking about prison reentry, and Secretary Wenzel's name came up in a very complimentary way from several people. So I want to compliment you on that. And then lucky enough to turn the radio on my drive back to Philadelphia.
There you go.
My call is about a family member who spent 6 years in state prison and was released on parole through Kintock Halfway House in Philadelphia. And our experiences and his experience, I guess, one comment is he said in all his time in the corrections system, this was the most unsafe he ever felt was when he was in that Halfway House facility. Open dorms, little control, little presence, and apparently inexperienced people that were not corrections officers and were more clerical. We went to visit, and it was almost disrespectful the way we were treated, trying to get in and checked and everything. And we managed to help him find a part-time job at retail that he was making minimum wage while he was in there. Before his release, he was allowed out to work. And he had to give up half of his income to them, I guess, as part of the policy. Fortunately, he had us to live with. If he was trying to save for an apartment of his own, there's no way he could have possibly made that. So, and he did not get any support to speak of. Anything that was done through our efforts and resources. So,
well, George, and only because we have to say goodbye to the commissioner in just a couple of minutes, and I appreciate your phone call, and I do want to give you a chance, John Wetzel, to respond to George's concerns and the experience he had in his family.
Yeah, and I think what George talks about is not a stretch in any of our community correction system. I think really he encapsulated what the numbers show and what, again, this is on the department set a low bar. We're now setting a higher bar. We now put more expectations around those halfway houses, and that's going to improve the environment. I'm confident of that.
But George described what his family member felt was a more insecure environment than he felt in prison. He felt in the halfway
house. Well, it's certainly, if you're talking about a place where people can go out to work, release, and those kinds of things. I mean, part of being in community corrections is that it is less secure.
Right.
And one of the arguments or one of the things that you could potentially say is that in a lot of our cases, we basically were reinstitutionalizing people because we made our halfway houses so much like prisons. It's the key is putting the right people there and having the right services that creates the right environment.
George, thanks for the call to Radio Times. And final question to you, John Wetzel. Then what do you hope this study does? And I realize it's to some degree you've already instituted some of the findings here. But looking ahead in 5 years, what do you want the halfway house system to look like in Pennsylvania?
I want it to be a system that works. I want it to be a system that complements the prison system and really makes crime lower, makes our community safer. And I'm confident that we're going to get there. We're taking the right approach, established a good baseline, made our policies consistent with research, and now we're ready to move forward.
Well, thank you so much for joining us
today on
Radio Times. And again, our guest has been John Wetzel. He's the Secretary of the Department of Corrections for the state of Pennsylvania. And we've been talking about a new report by the department showing that the state's halfway houses have been failing. We've been talking about his plans for reform and improved performance. We have Sam Dolnick waiting in the wings. We'll be talking about halfway houses in New Jersey. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Supporting WHYY Opera Philadelphia, presenting Mozart's masterpiece, The Magic Flute, from April 19th through 28th at the Academy of Music. When the Queen of the Night's daughter is kidnapped by an evil sorcerer, it's up to the heroic Prince Tamino to save her. Mozart's The Magic Flute is a tale of unpredictable, death-defying adventures to ultimately triumph in wisdom and true love. Tickets and information at operaphila.org or by phone at 215-893-1018.
On the next Fresh Air, we talk with Jarek Bischoff, a composer whose new album heads in an orchestral direction and features guest performers David Byrne, Caetano Veloso, Nels Klein, and others. Bischoff grew up on a sailboat His father was in an avant-garde rock band. Bischoff has music to play and stories to tell. Join us.
This afternoon at 3 and again tonight at 7 on WHYY.
I'm Robin Young. Join us next time for the news and these stories here and now. Another major city in China stops live poultry trading after an unusual strain of bird flu is discovered. And what about all the dead pigs? Also, They Might Be Giants on writing a nano song. That's Public Radio's Daily Digest of News and Culture here and now.
Today at noon on WHYY.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscowen, and just said goodbye to Pennsylvania Corrections Secretary John Wetzel, talking about reforming the halfway house system here in the state of Pennsylvania. And it's based on a study that was commissioned by the Department of Corrections, showing that about more than a half of the halfway houses in the state of Pennsylvania are failing. Joining us now is Sam Dolnick. He's a journalist with the New York Times. His articles on halfway houses won the 2012 George Polk Award for Justice Reporting, and I should say the halfway houses in New Jersey. And Sam Dolnick, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Hi, Marty. Happy to be here.
Nice to have you here. I read your story about this study in Pennsylvania, and also the role that John Wetzel has been playing in Pennsylvania trying to improve the halfway house system. I'd just be curious about your response to this this study that came out recently.
Yeah, it was a fascinating study for a lot of reasons. And it's the kind of thing that prisoner advocates in New Jersey have been waiting for a long time. The New Jersey system of halfway houses has been around for decades, but the state has never taken a hard look at whether the system is working, whether people who spend time in there are less likely to go back to prison or not. So Pennsylvania did take that look and came back with fascinating findings that Secretary Wetzel was discussing. Mm-hmm. But then on top of that, they took some bold steps in response to it. So it really is a groundbreaking step in the halfway house world.
Well, I certainly remember reading your series in the New York Times last year about New Jersey's halfway house system, and about 40% of the prison population works its way through the halfway house system in New Jersey.
Yeah, it's become a giant part of the way the state handles prisoners.
And is the same mission as in Pennsylvania? The idea is to rehabilitate people and get them back into society?
It's the same mission and even some of the same players. The two largest halfway house companies in New Jersey are also the largest in Pennsylvania.
And what were your findings? And I have to say, one of the things that I found pretty shocking was the level of violence in some of the halfway houses in New Jersey, the numbers of escapes from these halfway houses. Flesh that out for us, if you would.
Yeah, the New Jersey halfway houses are giants. They're bigger than a lot of prisons, you know, as many as 1,000 people in there at any one time. But they have a much less security than a regular prison. They're staffed instead of professional correctional officers, they have guards working minimum wage jobs who have received very little training. As a result, there has been lots of violence. We documented in our series sexual abuse. There were rapes inside the prisons. There have been gang violence. There was a murder there recently. And escapes is another piece of that. There have been hundreds and hundreds of inmates who escape these facilities. Either they just walk out the door or they don't return from their work release programs, and there have been very little consequences for the halfway houses who are supposed to be overseeing these inmates.
Now, in Pennsylvania, there are privately run halfway houses and some state run. Is that also true in New Jersey?
No, New Jersey relies entirely on privately run halfway houses.
And your series focused on one, community education centers.
Community education centers is really the pioneer in this private halfway house movement. They've been around for some 20 years now, and they've become the biggest player in the industry, certainly in New Jersey, but also across the country. They are a for-profit company. A lot of the halfway house providers are nonprofits, but this is a privately run company that has more than half the beds in New Jersey and about that ratio in Pennsylvania as well.
And what's its track record as you look at community education centers?
Community education centers is a very powerful player. They're close to politicians. They donate very heavily to elected officials across the country, especially in New Jersey. But if you look hard at the numbers, they've got a lot of escapes. There's a lot of violence. If you speak with inmates and workers who have spent time in their facilities, contraband is a serious problem. The people question what kind of services they're receiving, say that they're not getting the help that's needed, that the state is paying for. Again, part of the issue here is that New Jersey has never really examined what kind of services this company or any other halfway house is providing. So our look was really one of the first hard looks the industry has faced.
In fact, a part of your examination was looking at community education centers, CEC, and I guess the ties of some of the executives to the Christie administration. Can you again flesh out that?
Yeah, absolutely. Chris Christie, before he went into politics, was a private lawyer and a lobbyist, and he was registered as a lobbyist for community education centers. His closest friend and closest political advisor is a guy named Bill Palatucci. Mr. Palatucci was the senior vice president at Community Education Centers. The company, Christie has appeared at many of their facilities. He's spoken glowingly about them for years and years, and has put them forward as really the face of what he would like to see the correctional movement become. This idea of private operators can do the job better than the state is something that he's long supported, and he's hailed CEC as a model.
Does he still believe that based on some of his public pronouncements, or has he been quiet on this since your series?
As our series was running, he issued a statement promising to step up inspections in the halfway houses. Other than that, we haven't heard a lot from the Christie administration. They've also said that they are going to look at the recidivism rates along the same lines that Pennsylvania has, but that report isn't expected until 2015, I believe.
And where's Palatucci today?
He has resigned from community education centers. He left late last year and is now working as a private lawyer and he's still an advisor to Chris Christie.
And what is there a reason he resigned?
Well, they released a statement saying that it was time for him to move on. Not a lot more than that. It came after, months of pressure and attention related to his ties to Christie and the halfway houses, but he said it was time for a new job.
And that's Sam Dolnick. He's a journalist with the New York Times. In fact, his articles on halfway houses in New Jersey won the 2012 George Polk Award for Justice Reporting. We began our hour talking about halfway houses in Pennsylvania. Now we're talking about New Jersey, and we're taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. It's 1-888-477-WHYY. Any questions or comments, do give us a call. Sam, I don't know if you heard one of our callers talking to Commissioner John Wetzel, who had a family member at a halfway house in Philadelphia that was run by Kintock Group, and that's a group that you have written about in the Times.
Yes, yeah. The Kintock Group has halfway houses in both states. They're a major player. They're a nonprofit. We took a look at the executives who run the company. They receive very large salaries, $750,000 or so. There have been many, many complaints along the lines of what your caller said that we've been hearing for a long time.
Quoting from you, the Kintock Group, the second largest operator of halfway houses in New Jersey, is a nonprofit agency that is financed almost entirely by government contracts, but it's run like a well-heeled family business. The founders pay something like $7 million in salary and benefits. And then you also write about the fact that there are family members who've been hired to work for the Kintock Group.
Yeah. David Faulkner was the chief executive for a long time. He's now has an emeritus role, though he's still involved. But he's got several relatives who are either full-time employees or have been hired as consultants, and it's unclear exactly what services they've provided, but they've received lots of money from Kintock over the past few years.
And is there any way to see the difference between a nonprofit running a halfway house and a for-profit company running a halfway house?
Well, they're supposed to be doing basically the same thing. In New Jersey, it's a bit complicated. Only nonprofits are supposed to contract with the state. For-profits aren't supposed to be allowed to run halfway houses. CEC has found a loophole. They've got a nonprofit, an affiliated nonprofit that holds the contract and then hires CEC to run the halfway houses. So it's this kind of workaround that they've used for many years now. But no, whether it's for-profit or nonprofit, they're supposed to perform the same services.
Who then is in charge of oversight or regulation of halfway houses in New Jersey?
The Corrections Department, okay. The Corrections Commissioner, Gary Lanigan.
And I'm curious about his response to some of your reporting.
The state legislature held 2 days of hearings after the articles came out, and the Corrections Commissioner testified at length there and answered some of their tough questions. They say that they're aware of some of these problems, and they've been working on them. They defend the system. They say that it works, that lots and lots of people move through these places, and yes, there have been some bad incidents, sure, but there have been many more success cases than horror stories, and that they're working every day to improve.
And is there some truth to that based on your reporting?
Well, sure. I mean, thousands of people go through these halfway houses, and there certainly aren't thousands of murders. The serious gang attack would be the rare instance, absolutely. But there is, if you speak to enough workers, enough inmates, people who have spent time in there, even if not everyone is attacked, there is a culture of fear inside these places. And there's also a real question as to what kind of services, what kind of training the people receive when they're inside there.
And is it a mix of population inside some of these halfway houses?
Yeah, some of these halfway houses hold county inmates, some of them hold state inmates, some of them hold federal inmates, some of them have not yet been sentenced, some of them have spent 10 years in jail and are just finishing up their sentences. So there's a big variety there. These different populations aren't supposed to mix, they're supposed to be held in different wings of the facilities, but we've seen that sometimes that doesn't quite work.
So are we talking about a mix of violent and nonviolent people?
Yeah. There can be people who are held on something as minor as traffic violations, held, you know, in the same cell, you know, next door to people who are held on serious gun charges or, you know, armed robbery. Take your pick.
You mentioned that the Governor Christie has called for, I guess, some kind of examination. The legislature looks like it's also calling for some kind of a task force to look at the halfway houses in New Jersey.
Yeah, the legislature has introduced so far more than a dozen different bills to address the system. The one that is gaining the most traction is one that would create a new task force to look at how the system operates, see what the problems are, see where it can be fixed. And that task force, I believe, is going to issue a report in 2015.
In 2015. So we're talking 2 years, right?
Yeah.
Do you think the fact that, I have to say it's usually the reverse when you compare Pennsylvania and New Jersey, but do you think the fact that in Pennsylvania the corrections commissioner and the department has been more proactive on this issue, do you think that puts any pressure on New Jersey?
I think it certainly should. New Jersey has said over and over that these are very difficult problems and we have to move at a deliberative pace and we don't want to rush into anything. But I think we see right next door an example of a state that is looking at very much the same situation and is moving quickly. So I think that it shows that reform doesn't have to take years.
What got you interested in halfway houses in New Jersey?
I covered immigration issues, actually, and there was one of these halfway houses had bid for a federal contract to house immigrant detainees in addition to halfway houses. So that's how it came on my radar screen. And once you started reporting, I had never even heard of these idea of giant, massive halfway houses with 1,000 beds in them. You know, you think of a halfway house, you think of a rundown house that has, I don't know, a dozen or 15 guys in there kind of drying out, finishing up their sentences. This was a really different model. And so I became fascinated with trying to explore how this industry evolved and who are the players and what do they actually do.
And are they all over the state, these halfway houses?
They're all over the state. They're all over the country. And there's a huge variety. You know, some of them are that old model, just 12 or 15 people in there receiving counseling. Others of them, you know, look more like jails than a halfway house, 1,000 beds, barbed wire, super high security. So the term halfway house is a giant umbrella that contains a tremendous variety of facilities.
And were you able to get inside some of these facilities?
Yeah, I was reporting in New Jersey for almost a year, and I got two tours of CEC's flagship facility in Kearney, New Jersey, called Talbot Hall. So I certainly wasn't allowed to, you know, just kind of poke around on my own. These were very strictly guided tours by the company's chief executives, but I was inside the door.
Was this one of their better facilities?
This is the facility. Yeah, this is their flagship facility. It's the one that they certainly hail as their one of their best ones. I've heard many problems about what happens inside, actually, when the executives aren't around, but it certainly has a reputation for being one of the better ones.
And was it hard to get people to talk to you?
It took a long time. It was hard. The workers are minimum wage workers who need their jobs. They're scared of getting fired. The inmates are, you know, people who are among the most vulnerable in society. So getting them to trust me, to help them speak out, to have finding people who had the courage to speak out, took a long time. It was really challenging. But we found, I have to say, you know, dozens and dozens of workers and inmates, and, you know, we spoke to people across the spectrum who have spent time inside these facilities. And for our stories, we ran three stories last year, some, I don't know, 15,000 words total, and they were all on the record. We didn't have any off-the-record anonymous quotes. So we relied entirely on people who were brave enough to come forward.
Well, Sam Dolnick, thank you very much for joining us today on Radio Times.
It was my pleasure. Thank you, Marty.
You're welcome. He's a journalist with the New York Times, and we've been talking about his George Polk Award about halfway houses in New Jersey. He won the award in 2012. Go to whyy.org/Radio Times. You can find out much more about this program, including Facebook, Twitter, email, podcasts, archives. I'm Marty Moscow-Wayne. Thank you so much for joining us in this first hour of Radio Times. Stay with us. We'll be right back.